I'm David Schreiner Kahn, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Iman Bougegas. Iman is a Libyan national. She is assistant professor at the University of Benghazi in Libya. Iman has a PhD in orthodontics from Newcastle University in the United Kingdom. In 2011, Iman participated in the revolution against the 40-year regime of Muammar Gaddafi. Iman served as the spokeswoman of the Revolution and the Transitional National Council, which governed the liberated region of Libya until the full liberation of the country. Iman was a member of the Libyan Committee joining the International Commission of Inquiry on Human Rights Violations in Libya by the Human Rights Council of the United Nations. Iman, welcome to the show.
Hello. Nice. Thank you for having me in this show.
It's a pleasure having you. Could you tell me, Iman, what's the connection for you between your work in orthodontics and what became a major activity for you in the revolutionary activities?
Yeah, actually, I'm working as a professor. I'm academic at the university, so I have my students, and because of the old regime, everything was deteriorating at that time. The education, the quality of life. Actually, it was a unique kind of dictatorship. He was just disintegrating all the institutions, and it was only one-man show. So at that time, I felt that, I believed that those students, they deserve more than that. They were, many of them were very smart, very creative, and full of life and eager to learn. And the opportunities are becoming less every day. So I thought that as an older generation, it is my duty and their right to go out and try to make a change. So I think this is one of the motivations. It's not everything, because everything, the whole life was deteriorating. And it was always those discussions, but because of the brutality of the regime, it was very hard for anybody to go out. You know, it means that it's the end of anybody's life to go and protest or to say any word against that regime.
Right. In business, very often people are afraid to step forward and take a risk. But in actual fact, what you're risking in most cases is a financial risk. It's not a personal risk to one's life. So what you've done, although they're both risks, what you've done is quite different. And I wondered if you could talk a little bit about what it takes to have the courage to step forward in a time of impending crisis.
Yeah, well, I can give you an example. At that day, 17th of February, when the revolution started, it was my birthday. It is my birthday on the 17th of February as well. And by the end of the day, you know, after shouting, and I lost my voice, and my brother called me to say, from Saudi Arabia, he works there, to say happy birthday, and he couldn't reach me all the day. So he wondered about my voice, and I told him that I was just protesting against this regime. It's enough. We don't want him anymore. He ruined Libya and all of that. If this happened in the morning, my brother would have called me in the morning. Maybe I couldn't do that. It's just being together, believing in what we did, and just listening to bad things about what's happening, because around us there were police killing people. So all of this, it's like tearing the wall of fear. So when we were just calling our country and calling to the people to join us, and we knew at that time that we might be killed any moment, just we came out of our fear. So after that, I felt that I'm free. I'm not imprisoned in that fear anymore. And it's different from experience to experience, but I think just in believing in what we are doing and seeing that this is the only way, or this is the best way to do it. For us also, it was despair, because we couldn't do anything else rather than that, rather than risking our lives. But I think just confidence in the people around you, and or in this, in the project. For business, it's the project, mm-hmm. and yourself, and taking the whole whatever you can as tools, and then go forward, move forward.
Do you have a personal history of stepping forward in such situations?
Well, for me, because I'm academic, I'm just working at the university and working as an orthodontist, but always I was determined, I was very hard on myself, and I do whatever I have to do without even thinking what will happen. It's just that always I have this feeling of that I have to do my duty and do my best. What the end result, I don't know, maybe business, it's different, but you know, not everything in our hands. Just to believing, studying what we are doing, and then we have to take that step and go forward. I did my PhD, at that time I was successful, I had my patients, everything, but I felt that I have to go that one step forward more. Also, I went on my expenses and I did my master degree. At that time, I didn't know how I could have finished it. I didn't have secure income at that time, but I did it. I take risks, but of course, it's not like the business or different kinds of risks.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Do you have a family history of taking risks?
Yes, I have. I have my sister. This is our hero, and she my latest sister, she lost her life because of taking the risk on the 25th of June 2014. She was a human rights activist. She was a member. They used to call us the Revolutionary Sisters. We were there in the revolution since the first day, and because she's a lawyer, she was a lawyer, so she continued. For me, I thought that I have to go back and start from the faculty, start there in my profession to try to make changes. But for her, she continued with the human rights and with the just reconciliation and woman empowerment in her way, you know. For us, it's different, women in power. And then there were threats against her. And on the 25th of June, there was the elections in Benghazi, in my place. And she was in Tripoli at that time, and she had a lot of threats. And her son, there was an attempt to abduct her son, to kidnap him, maybe a month before that, and she was meant for that. And then she kept her sons away from Benghazi, but she thought at that time everybody tried to convince her not to go back to Benghazi at that time, but she said that this is my duty, whatever happens. This is the election day, this what we fought for the whole of our lives. And she went there and they killed her, and she kidnapped her husband. So this is till the end. This is taking the risk, the full risk.
How do you go on and have the courage to continue after such intense personal tragedy?
It is hard. Now in Benghazi, it's very hard because it's like a civil war. We didn't know who was responsible for my sister's killing, and we don't know anything about her husband, who was also in the revolution. It was the whole family, my husband, her husband, and both of us in the revolution since the first day. But this is now I'm with her sons in Jordan for some time, and then hopefully I will go there back. But that's our destiny, you know. It's not easy. It's hard. We were overwhelmed by the response of the people. This meant that there are many, many good people. It's not only the bad people. Even they have the higher voice now. She was killed for what she believed in. She knew the risk, and she took the risks. And we shouldn't betray her and what she believed in.
Having the courage to persist when such difficulty happens is something that is quite incredible.
Well, I think from a distance, but when you were there, when something happens, you know, it comes as the first choice. Because the price is very high, the paid price is very hard, and it's just you feel that whatever you want to do, this option comes in front of my eyes every time. So, and that's what happens, you know, if we all turned our backs, what will happen to the country?
Iman, you've mentioned a few times the importance of the people around you, the team, and having a focus on the project at hand. Tell me a little bit about your team and the people around you, and how together you've been able to support one another.
Yes, the team. It was the teamwork. It was at the beginning of the revolution, because we were at the beginning we were nine women and about maybe 70 men or something, and we were facing a tyrant. But because he just destroyed all the institutions, so it was very hard for him. Even when he gave the orders for them to be implemented. And so that team, when all of a sudden people were protesting in different way, and then they said that there's no one of the soldiers or Gaddafi's people in the city, they were frightened and they went away. So the people at the court, because we were protesting in front of the court, most of us were lawyers or judges and others academics and others just normal citizens. So we felt responsible for what was happening, you know. So people turned on us and they were waiting to take the orders from us. Okay, what shall we do next? What about the money? What about the front line? What about the media? What about recruiting others? What about the electricity? You know, everything we have to think about, it was forced on us. You know, it's just crisis management. You have to deal with things as they come to you, you know. So we divided ourselves, and this happened also. It wasn't planned, you know. Some people, because the lawyers and the judges, and they knew each other very well. They worked with us. So they just made a committee to find a governing body to deal with the international community, because nobody knew what was going on. And then there was the military committee to run the war, liberation of the whole country. It's you know, unbelievable. And none of us had any idea about anything related to that, because it was dictatorship. And
so you're learning on the fly.
Yes. Yes, crisis management, as it comes, you know. Then there was a flood of international media, flood of people from outside, even delegates, and they wanted to know who we are. So for me, it's because I speak English, and most of the lawyers there, they don't speak English. I found myself with the media and with the delegates, and just trying to explain ourselves, who we are. We want civil country. We are normal people. It's not that we were from different ideology, just people that you see in the street. It's not something special or something organized before that. Everything happens spontaneously. And then from there, it was very, you know, if it's a film, you know, you can't, nobody will believe it, because all of a sudden somebody will come, okay, we want guns and we want that. And what about that place? And then what about the zoo? After a few days, what will happen to the animals in the zoo? And nobody knew anything. What will happen to the money? And okay, people have to go and protect the vital places. From where we are going to get the people, and how we organize a liberation war. It was, but it went. We did not bad. The country was liberated. And yeah, it worked.
Do you think it makes a big difference if the people who are part of any crisis management team know one another before they get involved in the crisis?
Yes and no, because we had, it's the aim or the goal. We had one goal, to get rid of this tyrant. And this unified us. After that, when we got rid of him, problems started to come out on the surface. But in the beginning, till Libya was liberated, we were just one man, one hand. Because we had one aim and
right,
one goal.
Right, right. So having a very clear goal and a very clear rationale of why you're doing something is important.
This motivated all of us and reduced the differences and the ideologies and made everything go smooth as teamwork. We were not picking on our mistakes, you know. If somebody made mistakes, just another one will come and try to do something so we can move on. So teamwork goes with everybody have in his mind a clear goal.
Mm-hmm. So everybody's supporting one another, understanding that mistakes will happen, but that we need to support one another and get beyond the mistakes and just keep moving forward.
Yes.
Iman, what were some of the unexpected bumps in the road that came along as you were managing the crisis?
Yeah, many, many things, actually. One, I'm veiled, okay? I'm Muslim, but I'm not veiled, I'm not extremist. It's just, this is the way I am. So one day, one of the people who were religious figures or religious men, he came with his daughter and he told her that, look at this woman. I was there morning to night, working, hard working. And so he told her, when you grow up, I want you to be like her. So at that time, because we had a clear goal, he didn't see that I'm different than him or in his beliefs. You know, I'm not veiled, I'm outgoing, I'm working day and night in front and between men or something. It wasn't very common. Even we have about, in my place, 50% or more of the working force is women. Academics, and so it's not that we don't work, but in politics or in public places without clear guidelines, it was different. It was strange because we were in dictatorship, government. So those things were new to the society. But he didn't see the differences. He saw that I'm a hardworking woman. I'm working day and night for one aim. And he wanted his daughter to be like me. So this is a big thing, you know. It's just to see how we can be together and build on the meeting points, not just see the differences and trying to escalate them.
Right. So that's a really, that's an unexpected impact on a personal level.
Yes. This and also it's just looking at people joining us. You know, it's the power of determination and women when we were there in the front of the court, and in a Middle East society, you know, to see the women are on the stage and men are standing away, far, far away, because they were frightened. And fear of the future, what would have happened, what would happen if they joined us. So we were just waving to them, come and join us. And many of them, they said that we didn't want that, but it's just to see women, you know, in front of the scene and doing things that we couldn't do because we were frightened. And we feared the consequences. Just forced us to come and join. So this is, I felt that this is woman empowerment. This is the power. It's not about women or men. It's about the act, what you do. So this is also something that, because our society is a little bit separated. It's not, we work together, but not in all occasions. So when we see women, how they act and how they take the initiatives, and it works, and with respect, people respect them, this is a change in the society. This introduces a change in the society and change in the way of thinking.
Iman, do you think that you might have been able, that you were able to accomplish more because you were a woman?
No, it was, I was on the spot because a woman. So I have to work harder. I have to show that I'm dedicated in what I do, but no privileges for women. But maybe I don't think so. It's just that it depends on the woman. I think at that time it's a citizen or a human being, not a woman or a man at that time mm-hmm. of the crisis. Yeah.
Iman, since you've had a significant interaction with people outside Libya, what have been some of the results and the impact of your work with the community outside Libya, with the international community?
It was very positive from both sides, you know, because the people outside, we don't have institutions, and it's very hard for the European and Western mentality to understand that and to know how to work without a hierarchy or without having good administration, and so they didn't know even to whom they have to talk or what was going on, and the follow-up was big problem, because even when they start something, then it was hard for them to follow up because we didn't have any system, no institutions whatsoever. So and they wanted, even the West, they wanted to know that from a person that he can speak their language, and you can say that understand their way of life or their way of thinking by living, that he was living outside for some time. Also, this person should have credibility and knows how to say clearly what was going on. I think this, because I started that since the beginning. I was the when the Western media and Western delegates at the beginning, they came, I was the person who was speaking to them. And after that, I became the spokeswoman. So everything was going through me. So this even for a short time, but it gave me a lot of experience, what they expect and what's the message that I have to let them know it. And then even for, with their questions that I have to just pass my message through that. And follow it up after that, because many times I discovered that they change because they want everything to be exciting. So many times they change what I said, and they were sure that nobody will just follow what was going on. We were very busy, but I learned also that I have to follow up that and to come to them back, either to thank them or to comment. And I think this gave me some credibility that what I was saying, and also I was making email lists and emailing all of them for any news. And then if anybody wanted anything, I just followed up and I tried to help them. And then came the Human Rights Watch. And so this gave me credibility and gave me some experience for me to know what the West wants and what they want to know and put them in points.
So you have to know your audience.
Yes, I have to know my audience and know the message, how to deliver the message to different people and what to ask from them, because it's not just message. Because many times they just say, okay, what do you want us to do? Okay, what? So I have to think about practical ideas, practical work that they can come and work and help us in it, because this was very important for them, especially for the short run, not for strategic planning or something at that time. The logistic was very, very important. Introducing people, this is very important also, just to make, because the civil society was evolving at that time. It wasn't allowed for us to have any civil society activity in Libya by law. So the civil society, it was just spontaneous, everything. People just teamwork and everything and started, but we didn't know the logistics or how to do things. So the workshop started, and all of this needs somebody just to intermediate, if you can say, between the two parts.
Right, with two different cultures.
Yeah, two different kinds. That's what happened with Lisa. That's what I did also. We liaised from her side and my side as intermediators. And then she was successful, thanks to her. She did great work to recruit a team. And then they came and they gave many workshops on capacity building for the dental staff and students and for the civil society. And it was great. It was a very great experience.
Right. You're referring to Lisa Gibson, who was a previous guest on Smashing the Plateau.
Yes.
Who does work in conflict resolution.
Yes.
Iman, what are some of the ways in which you figured out how to understand what the audience wanted to hear?
It depended on who were they and where. For example, I went to the European Union, and for the former members, the meeting of the former members, and I was the key speaker at that time. It was a great experience. Of course, it was very nice to thank them at the beginning. But after that, we wanted to explain, because at that time, there was... okay, the country was liberated, but we didn't have anything. We didn't have any institutions or organizations or ministries or whatever. Everything was to the ground. So I have to be concise, but also I have to give them hope, you know, that we are not like Somalia or like other places, because we have the money. I have to make them. It's like in business that, okay, if you invest on Libya, this is for your benefit as well. And also that you were part of the problem because you supported this tyrant. So you have moral responsibility as well. And also you have a lot of interests because Libya is the backyard of Europe, especially Italy, and all the illegal immigrants at one time, they were coming from Libya. So it's for your, I have to see how I can convince them that it's for their interest, not only because this is the world now. Nobody will do something if and spend millions of money if they don't benefit from it. So I have to sell what I have, my idea, my message. I have to sell it to them. And also I have to give them hope that it's not a failure, that if they invest on us, it will be a success for all of us, not only Libya. Other places, they have to live. They, from the beginning, when I read about the conferences, I knew that they were interested in the military or in the civil society, so I had to read, to talk to people, to prepare myself, because at that time they just wanted to hear. They knew that I'm not maybe specialist in that thing in particular, but they wanted to listen from somebody that he got some credibility and can understand them. I can speak their language or can understand the way they think. So this was very important.
Right. So helping them to understand that you know how they think, but also you know what benefits them, and making sure that that's part of your message is really important.
Yes.
Iman, yes. How much time have you been able to spend on your profession as an orthodontist in the last few years?
Yes, it's... Now, after the revolution, I stayed maybe 1 year or something more than that with the people, the revolutionaries. And then I decided that if we want to change, everybody has to go where he belongs to. And I had a duty, I have a duty still in my place to create change and positive change, and to implement it, because change is hard and change is difficult, and it needs determination. It needs that you make your team believe in what you do, so they will be behind you. And because usually students they won't allow change very very easily. And at the time of revolutions, everybody thinks that he wants the price, that this is his revolution, and now he's completely free. No boundaries whatsoever. So the students, even for 1 year or 2 years, it was hell, because student will come to the dean and say, okay, let me see your papers, or let that, and let that. Everybody, for the first time, for generations, Gaddafi stayed for 40 years, and these students, they were born in dictatorship. So it was the first time for them to speak loudly, to rebel, and they didn't know, nobody knew the boundaries at that time.
Mm-hmm. Even in small ways?
In everything. Even the children, you know, they were protesting against their fathers and mothers at home, and writing papers, and then shouting, because everybody was free Libya. So that's what they were echoing, even at home, you know. We don't want that. We don't want you to order us. We don't want you to. So it was everywhere. It was the whole society. So it was very, very hard. And now it's also part. We are in a chaos in Benghazi, in Libya. And in whole Libya, because of that, it's the first time we were not prepared for this change. It just happened from total dictatorship to total freedom without institutions, without government.
It's a big change.
It's 180 degrees.
Yes.
So, and who am I to, so they listen to me, or who is that? And also there is the suspicion, and because this was part of the strategy of the old regime, just make everybody lack of trust between people all the time. So it's of course multifactorial, not one thing or another, and it will take time. Revolutions takes time. Even we thought that would be faster, but I think it will take its time as any other revolution.
Iman, can you tell me a little bit about what you're working on now, or what's in store for you in the near future?
Yes, I think now what we are passing through, unfortunately, is like tsunami or post-earthquake, the tremors. And this was, you know, there were a lot of discussions between me and my sister. But, and this is part of it, that I went back to my place and that I was telling her that whatever we do now, it's like tsunami. It will take everything with it because we have to pass this phase. Because we had nothing before that. It was just one man show. And for her, she believed that, okay, if we just, and I was telling her that when the time is ready, we will come and join and do whatever we can. But now we can develop ourselves and stay in our work, which is big thing. It's not a small thing, you know, to start to try to make changes in your place or the place that you are working with in at.
So you're talking about at the university?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. For her, she was no, because if everybody went out, who we were there and people look at us high. So if all the good people goes out, then who will stay there? Then it will be stolen. It will be stolen, and she was right. I'm not saying that she was wrong, but it's just different perspectives looking at things. That if what we were going to do will be useful, or it's better just to save our efforts and try to develop ourselves till this stage passes. So we went different ways. I went back to my place, to my work, and I worked with the students, research and publications, and trying to introduce the change in many things as I can. As I told you, that change is very hard and there are many, many obstacles, especially in the lack of the government will. Because at that time, everybody is scared that maybe it's too soon, that everything has to take its time. For her, she moved on, she continued, and unfortunately, she was killed. So I look high at her. She was very brave, and I don't know. Nobody can say who's right and who was wrong. I think she was right. She did what she believed in. She paid her life for that.
Iman, your sister was clearly one of the major influencers in your life.
Yes.
Are there other influencers or major resources that have been pivotal for you in your work?
Yes. I will tell you that of course, you know, always what inspires me, that people that have big or clear and global aims. So, of course, Lisa Gibson, and just how she changed, transformed her negative experience of losing her brother to positive experience of trying to help the third world and trying to help the country that I don't know if it's responsible. Still, we don't know. Many things are missing, but that was accused of killing her brother. this is very courageous, and I look up high to her. Also, Peter Bouckaert, who is the Human Rights Watch Emergency Director, and he also is an expert in humanitarian crisis. And he has many, many other roles, but he was there for us since the first days of the revolution. Maybe, I don't know, 3-4 days after we started, we didn't know anything. At that time, Gaddafi was bringing mercenaries from Africa. So any African, and in Libya, there were many, many Africans who were working and living there, and it was very hard. People were anxious and fearing for their lives. So any African that they didn't know before, they would have imprisoned him, or even there are a few incidents of killing. And it was all chaos, as I told you, that we were responsible for many things. So he came and he was very supportive and very understanding, because at the beginning we didn't know how to treat the prisoners, what to do, what to. So he was guiding us. At the same time, he was giving us a leeway space for try and error, if you can say. And he was, he's till now, he's a supporter, and he's a great man, really. He's an inspiration for me, of his continuous work with us and with other countries. And he lost one of his close friends in Misrata, which is another city in Benghazi. And he continues to lose many friends during these ugly wars in Syria and other places, and the way that he's dealing with that is great. It inspires me. So he's also, I have also, as I told you, Lisa, of course, and also I have, this is something big, but always I respect people who have everything in their lives, and then they take different paths. Like Bill Gates, for example, and also that he sacrificed a lot, and not he's enjoying what he does, but his choice is great. You know, the way he's thinking, especially when he's in the top, at the top of everything, and then he chose to help people. And to make this great foundation and to work very hard in it. He wanted in the best thing, as if it was Microsoft. It's not just giving money. And also the excellent example is Edward Buffett, that he chose to give the money to Bill Gates Foundation instead of just making another foundation for himself. So this is a great thing.
Right, and they've joined. And they've joined the way they've joined forces.
Yes, yes, for the good, for the whole world. So it's and for the people in need.
Iman, is there anyone else who you know personally that's currently doing work you're especially excited about?
As I told you. In Libya, it's just because we didn't, you know, we were not allowed even to say the names of the ministers or any name. It's everything happened after the revolution. Gaddafi didn't allow. It was one-man show, literally, only his name and his son's names and his daughter, of course. So still we are in the, everything is evolving, and there are many, many people are doing great things. But maybe it's not the time that things are coming out, because we don't have institutions or we don't have organization, everything, even the people who are doing things, it's just in the beginnings. So I have a lot of examples, but still maybe 2 or 3 years, I'll have list, long list.
Sounds good. Iman, yeah. Please tell listeners how they can learn more about you.
Yes, they can learn more about me and about the revolution. It's a great experience because it's a great experience. It's just a few type on Google, Iman Bogakis. I have many publications, scientific publications. And also there is a lot of articles, a lot of at the beginning of the revolution and even after that, after the death of my sister, that includes a lot of informations about us from New York Times, The New Yorker, The Guardian, the British newspaper, the German newspapers. There's also another book which is German book. It's about the people, the women who have influenced their, they have an influence in their countries during the revolution. And I was one of them from Libya. It was an example from Libya. So yes, and I'm not alone. There are many, many great Libyan women, and we are like anywhere else. You know, we work hard. It's just we have challenging circumstances we work in, and we hope that one day we have country that the country will be proud of us, and we will be proud of our country and our citizens and our laws.
Iman, thank you so much for taking the time to share your story and to join us today on Smashing the Plateau. My guest today has been Iman Bogakis, who is assistant professor at the University of Benghazi in Libya and also a spokeswoman for the revolution in Libya. Thank you again, Iman, for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a pleasure. It's my pleasure. Thank you.
You've been listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by 10 Strategic Partners. Be sure to visit our website at smashingtheplateau.com and join our email list to hear many more great interviews like this one. And if you like what you heard, please leave us a review on iTunes by going to smashingtheplateau.com/iTunes. I'm your host, David Schreiner-Kahn, and we'll be talking again soon.